Hello, I'm Toby Davey and welcome to this podcast where you'll hear me catching up with visually impaired opera singer Joanne Roughton Arnold, who is also a musician, teacher and co-founder of Formidability, Britain's first fully accessible opera company. If you caught my interview with Joanne on Radio 4's In Touch programme last summer, you would have heard Joanne talk about why she travelled halfway across the world from New Zealand to the UK to study the violin, why she moved to opera singing, and why she set up her opera company, Formidability. In this Zoom interview with Joanne, we chatted about what life is like for her in lockdown as a performer, musician and singer, and how easy it might be for her to link up with other musicians via video platforms such as Zoom, what it is like for Joanne teaching singing and violin via video, and any specific problems or issues she might have teaching in this way as a visually impaired person. You'll hear Joanne mention about two projects she's been working on in lockdown, one for the Power Orchestra and hints on a very exciting project for Formidability. I began by firstly asking Joanne generally how lockdown has been affecting her as a performer, musician, teacher and co-founder of Formidability.
Oh, wow, that's quite a big question. As a performer, it's been very sad because I'm missing working with other musicians live very much. We've had a couple of para orchestra projects that got postponed, stroke cancelled. The biggest one was that in March we should have been in Hong Kong performing at the Hong Kong Arts Festival. That was cancelled earlier in the year when it was clear that things weren't looking good in Hong Kong for the venue being open. That was before things got bad here. And we have a new project we began working on last November in research and development that was going to have more R&D in June this year, leading towards full rehearsals in the autumn and then the performances, I think, around October, November. But that's been put on hold until next year. I was very sad not to be working on that at the moment because it's a really exciting project. But I can't really give too many details about that because it's not been announced fully. But when it comes around, it's going to be amazing. So watch the Para Orchestra website for details on that one. Generally, as someone who sort of loves being performing and working with other musicians live, there are a lot of frustrations with being stuck at home. Although the internet's a wonderful thing, it has limitations for making music and live with other people on the other end of a Zoom or FaceTime or whatever call you want to use. Because of the lag of sound, there's about a second-ish, sometimes more depending on the speed of broadband, between one person making a sound and the other person hearing it, which means you just cannot synchronize as musicians. You just gradually get slower and slower and grind to a halt if you tried. And the other problem there is that the internet's great for talking and it understands if the speech is going from one direction to another. But as soon as we all try to make noise at the same time, it just gets horribly confused and you stop hearing anything. So I don't know whether this situation we're all in is going to lead, people with the right kind of skills to find solutions to those problems. Who knows? It would be wonderful if they could. In the meantime, I think we're all hanging out for the day when we can be in the room together again. Yes, as a performer, it's kind of put a halt on things. But then you find other ways of making music and being creative within the situation we're in. So I'm in the middle of a project that's given me a lot of joy at the moment, where one of the composers, Gareth Churchill, who has been working with a para orchestra, sent me an email and said, I'd like to write you a piece. Would you be up for it? And I said, of course I would. So he's currently writing me he called it a micro opera. So it's going to be very short. We're talking about 5 minutes long, so very micro. And it is for just unaccompanied soprano. So there's no need to try and synchronize with other people. We're working on it together via Zoom and emails going back and forth. And he sends me some installments of the score as he writes. And I try it out. And then we collaborate over Zoom and discuss and make alterations. So it's the moment I've got three of the sections already. And he's talking about there are going to be about eight of them, short little movements. It's called #trending, and the text is based on social media texts, which have been sort of popping up during our lockdown. So it's a very quirky piece with a lot of fun. So it's giving us both a good giggle while in this sort of fairly serious time, but we will need a bit of light, I think. So I'm looking forward to having the full score of that, and then I'll record it here at home, and then we'll see what sort of form that takes on and what we do with it after that.
Are there any aspects of lockdown that have affected you more as a visually impaired person? And if you found it tougher, how have you gone around sort of conquering those possible problems?
I think for me, the thing I was unsure about at the beginning, and I suppose it is a bit more of a challenge, is spending so much time staring at a screen. It gets very tiring, and I don't know whether that's just because of my eye condition or if that's a problem that everybody's having. I suspect it's the latter, but perhaps it's magnified by being visually impaired and that you're already trying to see things and already working harder than perhaps other people are to try and focus on objects that are a little bit trickier to see. So when you're therefore staring at a screen and probably drying your eyes out and dealing with glare, that's definitely been tricky. And also I think when you have pixelated images, if one of you has slower broadband that causes the other to look a bit like a Picasso painting, then you find yourself trying even harder to decipher what their facial expression might be conveying, you know, plus the lag of the sound. So, you know, the kind of headaches and all of that gets quite tricky to deal with. So I've got the painkillers to hand and then a glass of water in case. Yeah, so I've been doing a lot of online music teaching, and both for my private pupils and the school that I teach singing in has got us giving our lessons online, which is very, very intense. So I did raise this as potentially being an issue for someone with a visual impairment. And given that teaching back-to-back lessons all day is already a very full-on thing to do, so to be doing that while staring at a screen when you're flipping literally back-to-back from one lesson to the next and there's no downtime in between. So the suggestion was that, you know, I could try turning off the video and doing some of it just audio, which I haven't resorted to that. I've had the odd time that's happened simply because people's Wi-Fi has cut out and we've ended up with only audio and no video. And it's doable, but you just find yourself then having to kind of almost audio describe yourself as you go and keep bearing in mind that they can't see you anymore.
Would you say teaching via video, like many other musicians and teachers are doing at the moment during lockdown, has more sort of, I suppose, issues for you as somebody who's visually impaired? And it's obviously more trickier if, as you say, the image starts pixelating and, you know, you're not able to see what the person's doing. Have you sort of put other things into place to do your teaching via video?
I haven't put anything specific into place. One thing I'm quite aware of is that, and I think a lot of us are, is that, you know, when you're working on a video call, you instinctively look at the person's face on the screen, but of course that's not where the camera is. So it can look to the other person as though you're not looking at them. And I'm aware with my condition with nystagmus that that's already an issue because my eyes move independently and I don't use them both at the same time. I use one or the other. So I'm kind of aware that in a normal face-to-face situation, sometimes it can look as though I'm not looking directly at the person I'm speaking to simply because I'm using an eye that they think I'm using one eye and I'm using the other. And it looks like you're looking across their shoulder or behind their ear. You're not. So when I've caught myself on the screen, when you see yourself, and I think I'm looking at the center of the screen on my iPad, and actually I'm looking off to the side. And I keep thinking, I hope my pupils aren't getting horribly distracted by this. Like, no one said anything. They're all very polite. I think one thing that with Formidability, with my company, that we are looking at doing is putting together a questionnaire that we're going to send out. And we're aiming it at disabled people. And we want to try and get some sort of sense about how accessible all the online streaming and available of arts is to people with disabilities. And we want to find out what would people like companies to do differently or better, perhaps both during kind of lockdown and as we come out of it. And also, of course, we're interested to know about what people would like from companies in terms of accessibility for live performance as well, as a way of getting some information, getting some data, and then feeding that into our work. And maybe if we can get other companies interested in knowing these things and think about how they serve everybody rather than just the able-bodied people.
I think it's really difficult at the moment because there's been, you know, the National Theatre have been putting out live streamings of shows and things like that. And they've had one, Twelfth Night, which had audio description, which they did in a bit of a hurry. And you know, I applaud them for doing it. And I think they did a fantastic job. But I think it is so difficult because arts venues want to do stuff. They're pushing a lot out digitally and they don't have the resources or the people because people on furlough and everything else. So it's very tricky. But I think after we come out of this, which might be soon, might not be soon, I think there's a big and hopefully going to be a big question and debate about the accessibility of digital content because it is slightly lacking, I think.
Yes, absolutely. And yeah, I know, I completely agree with you. So, and this is something actually with this new little miniature micro opera that we're hoping to make it a visual experience as well as an audio, make it a video that we upload. But we want to really think hard about how we make that accessible. And if we can make it accessible in an interesting artistic way rather than just here's some text across the bottom of the screen. So that's something we'll have our thinking caps on now to get the creative juices flowing as to what we can do to make it eye-catching in the best possible way. So yeah, we're keen to make anything we do as accessible as possible.
How have your students found it being taught via video? How have they found it all?
I think they found it better than perhaps they expected. I know one or two were a bit concerned about how would it be, weren't really sure, but we've worked together. I learned very quickly about the issues with lag, which I'd read about before I started it and so on. So I've adapted my teaching methods to change the way I would normally work. But actually there've been some positives as a result. So if you take singing and the violin by online means at the moment. And for the singers, we're hardwired as human beings to copy the sound of a human voice without thinking about how we're doing it. We just do it. It's how we learn to speak in the first place as babies. So normally in a singing lesson, I would demonstrate a little exercise and then we would do it with me playing the piano and the student sings it, or I sing with them if they need that little bit of extra kind of confidence. But I can't do that online. So we've become a kind of a call and response version going on where I sing the exercise, they sing it back to me. I sing it up in the next key, they sing it back to me and so on. And what I've been finding is that people start to instinctively copy the correct technique without me having to use lots of words to tell them what to do. So that's been a really positive thing. And the other very good thing is that while it's frustrating that I can't, say, play the piano with them while they sing their way through a new song, and I have to do it by the call and response version, I've also been kind of making them really look at the dots on the page, at the pitches, where they're going, rather than what a lot of them do, which is just to read the words and sing what they hear from the piano. So they're actually having to engage much more effectively and more directly with the notation of the music and really think about what each sound should be rather than, as I say, being kind of held through it all and sing it with the piano. So I'm hoping this means that they're going to come out of this actually as better musicians and being a bit more independent and able to hold their own.
Probably working a bit harder as well.
Yeah, they are. It becomes very intense. Yes, we can't get through as much in a lesson as we would normally do, but the quality of the work has been surprisingly good. With the violinists, there's other challenges. I have a number of quite young pupils, sort of say 10, 11 or so, who are not yet at the stage where they would normally be expected to tune their own violin. And that's something I would do at the lesson. Obviously, I can't physically do that for them and help them. So I've had to teach them how to do this and teach their parents. So, we've had some challenging times where, you know, that the parent might turn the peg a little bit too far, a little bit too fast, and the string breaks. And then you have to talk them through how to change a string. So it's all quite challenging. But, you know, we're all getting new skills, and perhaps this is one that they weren't expecting to acquire. But, you know, we needs must, and it's better than having nothing.
Formidability, the opera company you co-founded, had a very successful year last year with the double bill at the Arcola Theatre, which had some fantastic reviews from what I can read and stuff and things. How much effect has COVID-19 had on the company for its plans for this year and beyond?
Well, thank you for your lovely words about our production last year. It was an incredible experience and we were absolutely thrilled with the results and delighted that we got some very lovely words from reviewers. So yes, we came out of that very keen to move forward, but we took some time afterwards just to kind of let the dust settle and recharge. I in particular, having been wearing many hats during that whole process as performer and producer and fundraiser and publicist, and I had some wonderful people with me, but it was quite a Herculean effort to make the whole thing happen. So we've been taking stock. So at least in the first quarter of this year, we weren't actually doing anything particular. So we had nothing cancelled directly. We had ideas that were percolating and things that could have become something that then had to be kind of put on hold. But we didn't actually, as I say, have a particular project that had to be stopped. But it just meant we were a little bit stuck in terms of how to move forward and how to stabilise ourselves and make sure we had a good sort of financial grounding so that we could be ready to leap forward and as soon as we come out of this and make more great work. So I'm absolutely thrilled and incredibly grateful to Arts Council England because they have awarded us a grant from the COVID-19 Emergency Fund. So this means that we are now in a position to be planning, be creating something, and we are actually working on a project that we can start work on it while we're in lockdown, which is wonderful. So we're in talks with some wonderful artists about getting that off the ground at the moment. And I'm feeling quite excited about what this could be. It's going to be a short chamber opera. So we're talking 30 to 40 minute piece and with a very small cast. And we're going to explore when we're allowed to meet together in a room, possibly a larger room to indicate to enough social distancing. We've got some ideas for some more new ways of making opera accessible beyond what we did last year. So I'll leave that sort of tantalising there hanging in the air and I'll watch the space for more announcements. But it's going to be exciting.
Has this sort of lockdown had an effect on the type of performances you're planning and how you might deliver them and the sort of format of them? Because obviously, you know, lockdown might ease soon, might not ease soon, but when it does start to ease, it's probably going to take a long time for people to take their step into a theatre or concert hall again. So are you looking at changing things to adapt to that sort of potential new normal, as they say?
Dreaded phrase, yeah. No, you're absolutely right. So I know there's a lot of uncertainty in the performing arts and the profession about when we're going to all be allowed to perform live again. When will it be safe to have an audience in the theatre? And it can get, if you could easily find yourself getting very, very depressed about this, very all doom and gloom. So absolutely, we are thinking about that and we're thinking about ways that we could work that and present work that could be presented digitally rather than live. And, you know, I have said this to the artists that we're looking at working with for this new project, that we need to bear this in mind, that it could be a long time before we can actually perform it live. So it would be prudent to create the work bearing in mind that it might need to be performable digitally as well as live. And even when we get it together into a room and do some research and development, which would be, you know, sooner than we can get in front of a live audience, we'll need to be thinking about the safety of the artists and ensuring social distancing, assuming that's what we're still need to do. So we're going to need a big room. And but it could lead to some interesting artistic decisions. Who knows? It doesn't need to be a negative.
In Italy and across the world, we've seen many singers step out onto their balconies and open their windows and doors and sing to their community. Have you stepped out onto your doorstep and sung to your community around you?
I haven't, actually. I live in a sort of fairly isolated spot, so there's not many people that would hear me if I did that.
Which maybe usually, just the birds.
Well, indeed, there are a lot of birds around here, which generally is quite a useful thing when you're an opera singer and you're trying to do lots of practice or or teaching young violinists who might not be making the prettiest sound just yet. It's quite handy that the neighbours aren't just through the wall. So, the answer to your question, I haven't tried that, but maybe I should try it when I'm walking through the woods with a dog.
Yeah, sing to the birds and the other wildlife.
Absolutely.
It's been lovely chatting, and we'll keep in touch.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Toby.
To find out more about Joanne and hear some of her singing, do visit her website, joannerowtonarnold.com. And for up-to-date news about Formidability, do visit formidability.org. Do visit my website, tobydavy.co.uk, to find out more about my portfolio of services, how to contact me, and ways to follow me on social media. You can find my in-touch interview with Joanne and other examples of my audio work through the embedded audio boom player, which is on the radio and audio page of my website. You can also find more examples on my Audio Boom channel, which is now also available through Apple iTunes and Apple Podcasts. Do all keep safe and well.